forever.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Andrew.
And hey, everybody else.
And welcome to our podcast,
Scary Stories to Tell on the pod. It is typically a podcast about scary stories and urban legends and spooky things you tell us about. But this summer, every Friday, we are watching a film of Stephen Sommers' filmography, and we like to call it
Stephen Summers.
Again, we will never decide on one of them.
Continue to vote by opening your pillowcase, whispering your vote into the pillowcase, and then slamming it shut.
Don't make us choose between our two gorgeous sons.
Don't make us pick.
And this episode is long anticipated. We are so incredibly excited.
It's all been building to this.
We have two incredibly special guests with us this evening. They are Paul F. Tompkins and Janie Haddad Tompkins.
Hi.
Welcome. Welcome. Thank you for joining us to discuss this 8-hour long movie we all just watched together.
It was so long.
Really? Now, we were originally, if this is okay to tell people.
Please.
Yes.
We were originally going to get together and watch The Scorpion King.
Right.
And then
Chris and I got the gay cold. Not from doing anything untoward.
Just from chatting with friends.
We literally went to a place with more than 12 people, talked for 30 minutes, and we were like, well, we're sick now. But this has all been worth it because we were supposed to watch The Scorpion King together, which it was very fun. Anne and I had a blast.
It was just fine.
Yes.
Okay. It was a good B+.
Okay. Totally fine.
But I think that was Gene Shalit's review, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just fine.
He didn't do any wordplay at all. He's just like, nah.
Cut off his mic. But today, all four of us are going to be discussing the classic 2004 Stephen Sommers film,
Van Helsing. Yeah. Oh, my God. Boy. You know, if four people say Van Helsing at the same time, Stephen Sommers shows up and pitches another movie.
Did you see it?
We truly cannot find Stephen Sommers.
Where is he physically now?
We don't really know. Is this for real?
Yeah.
Like he disappeared?
Oh, I don't think it's like a Shelley Miskovich fully. Right. Oh, but okay. I do think.
You don't think he got keel-hauled? But
no.
He's currently being beat up by Imhotep.
I wouldn't be surprised if he was self-keeled-hauled for fun.
He wasn't involved with Scientology, was he? What do we know about him?
Well, we know that his most recent film that he directed was a movie called Odd Thomas, which we will be covering in a couple weeks.
Okay.
How?
And
what year was that?
That was 2013 or 2014?
2013, and it had been on the shelf for a little bit. So
Right. Wow. So it's been...
And is he from America?
Yeah, he's from America. The Twin Cities.
Right.
Oh.
So I feel like that gives him some grace. I feel like people from the Twin Cities are typically friendly folks. Mm-hmm. Minnesotans, I feel like, kind of classic.
Sure, yeah. I love
people
Minnesota.
Who would make Van Helsing.
We all know this.
And wow, I mean, all of us had seen Van Helsing before. I think, Janie, did you realize whether or not you had?
I honestly thought that I had, and then when I was watching it, it just felt like kind of like nothingness. Like there was sort of like, I felt kind of nothing really about, I mean, it was an assault.
Yes.
Like pulled away from yourself.
And then I was like, I did. And then I was like, well, did I see it? And it was at one of those where I kind of fell asleep in my little half.
Sure.
Sleepy, like, you know, when there's the crazy,
because
like,
Janie
lights,
does have a thing where if there's like a lot of fast action and flashing
lights,
stuff.
I kind of like, I become entranced.
I'm that way. Whoa. With musicals.
That happened to me when I saw Into the Woods.
That I have also fallen asleep seeing Into the Woods.
Stop.
Oh my God.
This is what, which version?
It was in the 90s.
Okay.
Was it toddler.
I saw that might have more to do with
it. I was in heaven. Yeah.
Okay, maybe I was.
Now we know the rest of the story.
Maybe I was a fully formed.
I fall asleep if I drink like a whole bottle of milk or formula.
If somebody rocks me on their lap,
yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, I have that.
You all are missing the pure adorability of Lady Bird burrowing into a blanket next to Paul and Janie.
Lady Bird has taken such a shine to Paul of Tompkins.
Lady Bird loves Paul.
I bribed her with some treats. It's true.
It's always hopeful. This movie is a high octane, unadulterated Stephen Sommers.
Yes. If you haven't seen it, you could.
You could.
You should, but you could. Mm-hmm. And it's available for rental.
Yes.
So you are committing money to this, which is something to think about.
It is currently not on any of the streaming services. I think you can get it on Peacock Premium and AMC Premium.
No way.
Which is two premiums. But we did rent it. I don't regret that.
No. And you know what? This movie made $63 million in DVD rentals, which is, I think, either a third or half of what it made at the box office.
Really?
That is astounding. Yes. This movie made a ton of money. Universal went in so confidently that this was going to be a huge franchise that would last, which I will get to a question I have about that later. Mm. But so much to the point that the space that is currently occupied by Hogwarts Land in Universal Studios and Islands of Adventure was conceived as a Van Helsing land. They really thought it.
They really thought. Yeah, their experience with The Mummy spoiled them. The day after The Mummy debuted in theaters, they ordered a sequel.
Right.
And then like a few days after they started shooting The Scorpion, or a few days after they started shooting Mummy Returns, they ordered The Scorpion King.
Right. Wow.
They were just they felt like they couldn't fail.
Yeah.
Which is a dangerous place to be.
And this is a fraught thing that Universal has. They have this great property of the Universal Monster movies, which I grew up absolutely loving. The first time I remember thinking like, that's a good actor, was Lon Chaney Jr. in The Wolfman. Mm-hmm. And I was like, he's really feeling something, you know? And it really,
I'm him.
Yeah, I was like, there's so much pain in his eyes. And clearly Stephen Sommers is a huge fan of old monster movies. And that love and affection like is present in all these movies.
Yeah, for sure.
It is just, we were discussing it. The difference between The Mummy and Van Helsing is the Mummy, everyone is having a blast and you can tell that like everyone is having a really good time.
Yeah.
And in Van Helsing, either because of the story being just more somber or unknown production elements, no one is having a good time.
Yeah, they're wet a lot. They're in corsets. Yeah. They're wearing a ton of leather layers, which isn't fun.
Yeah.
There are no jokes.
There are no jokes.
Like the Mummy had little comedic physical bits, like where what's her name was on the Rachel Weisz was on like the ladder and she knocked over all the, you know, she was kind of clumsy. You know, there was nothing like that with these characters.
No, that's exactly it.
Was it the same screenwriter was it him for both or just Van Helsing?
Is both he did the screenplay for the Mummy?
Yes.
Wow. So yeah, he did.
He did have a comedy writer though, like help him like go through and add some jokes.
Some punch-ups.
Yeah. Kevin J. O'Connor. He did share a screenplay by credit for The Mummy.
Okay. Yeah.
And someone else did a polished draft. It was uncredited. And there were a lot more producers involved, but this was written and directed by.
Yeah.
And you can tell it's just like, it's relentless. What Janie said right after is it's relentless. This movie is like,
and it's also it's somebody who is very successful now, being given carte blanche. They can do whatever they want, and nobody's going to tell them no because, like, well, he's the goose that lays the golden egg. Like he must know. Like, there's nobody in studios at Universal that's like, I think we should give him some notes about this.
Right.
They don't fucking know.
They needed to give him a couple notes.
Yeah. It seemed like he was like, see, I did a good job with The Mummy and let me do this. And he didn't realize that other people had their hands on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
In many ways. And again, we would not do this whole series if we didn't have a great love for Stephen Sommers and what he does.
I just had a flash of him maybe listening to this podcast and got scared.
It is the truth. Like his movies really kind of defined for our age group, like kids having fun with something scary and being introduced to it and like not being afraid, which is great. Mm-hmm. But the script in some ways feels like it was translated on Google Translate to another language and then back yes. to English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there are lines that maybe were supposed to be jokes or things that just feel like they were temporary dialogue
yeah.
that got left in the exchange. Like the particularly the Brides of Dracula saying things like, oh. Do you like to fly? Or what was the big one? You can't go until I say you can go. And I say you can go when you are dead.
Bad. Yeah.
It's like there's no wordplay here.
Yeah.
Yeah. When she stabs, spoiler alert, she stabs Kate Beckinsale's character, stabs one of the brides. She goes, I say, if you're going to kill someone, kill them. Don't just stand around talking about it.
Which is like,
very much the vibe of I just called the jerk store and yes, they're out of
absolutely.
You.
that little quip has more words than like my bio. Like it's, there's too much stuff.
Right.
In oh my that God. Quip.
Totally.
It's the full Declaration of Independence.
What's so strange about it is that not only do scripts go through a bunch of revisions before they get to the set, but right. once you get to the set, there's things that are changed all the constantly.
All the time.
Yeah. And like once you hear it out loud, you might say, actually, you know what? Let's tweak that line a little bit. And this might be the result of that.
Oh wow. My God.
I also.
That's a good point.
Wow.
This
thank you. These guys won't give it up, honey. I'm glad you're here.
Bad point.
In our next segment, we hate that point. Yeah, I also wonder, because listen, Stephen Sommers movies are often populated by very hot people. There are different types of hot people. Mm-hmm. There are different types of hot actors. I feel like The Mummy was maybe populated by hot people who maybe weren't always hot and like know some jokes mm-hmm. or like know
yeah,
how to
yeah, like yes. theater training. Yeah. This movie not only has a lot of like models and yes. dancers in it. It also has all of them doing a dialect that they had to learn fresh. I doubt any yes. of these people had like Romanian accents ready to go.
Right.
So like to tweak the dialogue after you've been working with a dialect coach is really difficult.
Yeah.
Super tricky. And it also is like Kate Beckinsale and Hugh Jackman are wonderful. I mean, they're movie stars and they're very mm-hmm. good at their jobs. And they are, I would describe them as like hyper earnest performers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like there's not a lot of, they're not known for like a tongue in cheek sensibility.
Yeah. No, they're not.
And I think the That's lack of point. That is really felt in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And who normally would like even the comedic relief character of Carl, who's the actor who plays him and played Faramir?
David Wenham.
David Wenham is typically like a leading man, handsome guy.
Yeah.
And he's kind of trying to be the funny guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's not, you're still like, that's a really handsome person with a dumb haircut.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know. You can't put a wig on a pig.
You can't.
You could. I'd like it.
On a handsome pig?
You can't put a wig on a pig. You can't put a wig on a handsome pig.
He just look funny.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that pig is handsome. But yeah, it is like, I felt that same thing of like, none of these people ever had to be good at comedy.
Right.
They never had mm-hmm. to learn how to tell jokes. And so consequently, they cannot. But ironically, Hugh Jackman, who's done a ton of theater and musicals yes. and stuff like that, he knows his way around a joke,
right.
isn't given any. Like there's a couple lines that he has that are sort of sarcastic and that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right. Where he's like, fuck this. I was like, that's not a joke though.
It's so rare that people lean into what is magnetic and charismatic about Hugh Jackman in real life. Mm-hmm. And not that I've like hung out with him, but in interviews I've seen online. He is so positive and smiley and
yes.
and it's like, I kind of, Janie, you brought this up that like, he's always so unhappy killing monsters, but this movie would be so much better if he
it's
loved
like that was like his passion. Yeah. Yeah. Like what if like he's like, I'm kind of grumpy, but like, I'm really good at killing monsters and it kind of brings me joy, you know, yeah. like, yes. I don't know.
They're monsters.
Right.
You helped people. Yeah. The movie is set up at the beginning that Van Helsing is hated universally.
Right.
But he's bummed because he's a murderer. Yeah.
They call him a murderer, which like A doesn't really check out because right. I think people are generally thrilled that you kill the monsters, and B, like, it's a stone cold bummer because then
yeah.
your protagonist is like, I hate this. I hate being protagonist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's misunderstood and he doesn't really like, there's no way where he gets to express that in any scene. Really.
Yeah.
It's also, it's so they're just like, they're smearing this over. Like the idea that he's wanted is because he kills people who turn back into people. He kills monsters that turn back into people after he kills them. And so everybody's like, this guy's a murderer.
Okay,
and it's like, they're assuming, we're supposed to assume so much backstory before this movie starts. Like when we see the wanted poster and everything. And it's like, it's too much shit crammed together. And this like, I feel like this movie was part of that era that they've gotten better at, kind of, right. they've at least figured out how to sell it, but, and make it work. But where it's like, it's too many monsters. It's too many, like the Batman movies where it was like, and now there's going to be not only Catwoman, but also the Penguin. And then there's going to be three villains and there's going to be four. And it's like, it's too much. And it also gives you nowhere to go. Like if they really wanted to make this a series of movies, it's like, have one fucking monster that's hard to get.
And then the one that you didn't kill at the end that we know is still out there.
Yeah. And that is, I mean, my big thing, my big question with this movie, which again was meant to be a franchise, was like, okay, you're getting rid of Dracula and the Wolfman, roughly Frankenstein.
Yeah.
In the next movie, are we to believe that Van Helsing's going to fight the Creature from the Black Lagoon, the Phantom of the Opera, and the Invisible Man? Like, what are you?
Like, why is it always threes? Like, you could have drug this out to 10 movies.
Yes. And like, how are you going to tie them together?
Yeah. You started with Dracula, Frankenstein, and Wolfman. Those are the only good ones.
Yes. And also.
Yeah, you left yourself like nowhere to go.
Originally, they were going to have the Creature from the Black Lagoon in this one. And I'm sure they were like, we better keep him. Because it can't just be like the Phantom of the Opera and the Invisible Man.
Yeah.
It's God, I know. Yeah, you're totally right. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy that like they didn't believe that they could do more than one.
And then if you run out of Universal Monsters, then what? Then it's like a ghost? Like what is he?
Ghost man.
Right. Well, sorry.
Oh, no, keep going.
And that is.
No, not me.
I have a controversial opinion.
Uh-oh, here comes.
So.
Ladies need to wash their ass.
Sorry. This takes a hard left turn into me being revealed as a troll underground comedian.
Sorry.
So this movie is harkening back to, I think, the House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula sort of movies. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, and I love old monster movies, those movies are actually not good. They're not good. I love them. I rewatched them recently.
Okay.
House of Frankenstein, which is my favorite. Dracula is in the first 15 minutes of. He's played by John Carradine. He dies before Frankenstein or the Wolfman show up. So he's not even involved.
The funeral.
They're sitting around Swedish meatballs being like, I mean, I hadn't seen him in so long. I just feel.
We need to get together when there's not a funeral.
It's terrible that it takes this.
Dracula gets killed off, sidelined immediately, and Frankenstein and the Wolfman barely interact. It's just not a great template. The only one that really works is Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And the reason that works is that there are two comedic leads surrounded by a scary world. Right. And it is very funny to see funny people be like, we got to get away from these monsters.
Right.
Like, that's very funny.
Entertaining.
And the thing is, all the actors, Lon Chaney Jr. and Bela Lugosi, are maybe acting the most serious out of any Universal Monster movie they've been in before. Yeah. And it is so much funnier that it's like, when Dracula is trying to hypnotize you and is very seriously trying to do it, and it's like not working, like that's a really huge success.
Yeah.
This movie falls into the trap of virtually everyone is serious, down to the point that Kate Beckinsale's major want in this movie is to free her family from hell.
Yeah.
Just a good summer blockbuster want.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to die and go to heaven. No. Why are you wearing a corset then? What is this?
Yeah. Like you could have done that yourself.
You could be old. Why are you so young and hot?
This movie
Let this girl eat bread. Yeah. What is this?
This is for like horny Catholic teens, I think.
Well, that explains why we liked
it. I know. Yeah. Truly, we gravitated right towards it.
I feel so spoken for. I, yeah. At this point, I was already reading a lot of Lord of the Rings fan fiction, about to start read a lot of Pirates of the Caribbean fan fiction.
Wow.
And sort of Hugh Jackman with long hair wearing like a cowboy hat. I was like primed.
Yeah.
It's begging for fan fiction.
I did not like Hugh Jackman's look in this. I did not like Van Helsing's whole thing.
Walk us through it.
I feel like it was either you have to have a big hat and short hair, or you have to have long hair and a smaller hat.
Oh.
Like the two together did not work for me.
It was a lot.
I felt his outfit for somebody that it has to be like on the move all the time,
right,
was very bulky and very heavy looking. Mm-hmm. It wasn't sleek. You know what I mean? Like it also made it confusing as to what time period this is taking place.
Yeah.
Because at one point the friar says, I cabled the Vatican, and it's like, oh, are cables a thing now? Like he sent a telegram, but everyone looks like they're medieval serfs or whatever.
Yeah.
So where are we in time?
I missed that. I mean, I remember him saying cable the Vatican, but I didn't put together that would have been the first we'd seen of any kind of technology.
Yeah. There's also like semi-automatic dart guns, which huge. I don't think, I mean, the movie's supposed to take place in the 1880s or 1890s. It's a little bit unclear.
Right.
But like, they do a lot of swings with what is possible at this time. Boy.
And what I loved, Janie, when you brought up the fact that the Vatican has this secret society underground where they're making super high tech, like steampunk
weapons. Like a James Bond.
But you were like, but even in this like quasi fantasy world, there are still no women allowed.
No women. Yeah. I'm like, this is a made up thing, and like, it can't be a diverse universe. Yeah. Like, there's no inclusivity at all. It's there's like all one, white dudes.
There's one cool woman, and she dresses like one of the Pussycat Dolls.
Oh my God, that's true. That is exact.
Yeah,
it is the same silhouette.
It also, Anna, you brought up that there's a big kind of bachelor energy. Where like all of the vampire brides are always like laughing, sounding really tired, but they're laughing at nothing.
And yeah, it's like Chris Kelly has brought up that in The Bachelor, there's always sort of a light bit of laughter, even though nothing funny has been said. Like when they show up on a date and they see each other, they both go.
I've never seen The Bachelor, but hearing this,
you've never seen it.
No, hearing this description is making me happy to not have seen it.
We might need a secondary podcast.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Oh my God.
I just read some novel about like that takes place in a bachelor world, and I read the whole, I just like stuck with it.
They're up super late. Like those date scenes in the beginning when there's like 30 people.
Oh,
they stop.
Oh my gosh.
And during the rose ceremony.
It sounds
the
miserable
sun's coming
to be a part of it.
It sounds awful. And you don't make that much. You don't make money.
It really does have a lot in common with this movie where you never know what time it is.
Yeah.
And yes.
It's always dusk.
Because also the vampires came out during the day.
Yes.
And they
there's
were
an
like,
afternoon
then
werewolf.
They explained it later.
There's an afternoon werewolf?
Right. They were like,
she was like, oh, they wanted to catch me off guard. That's why they came out in the day.
Which,
and it's like
This movie has clouds doing a lot of work.
Absolutely.
Cloud blocks a full moon. The werewolf turns back into a person.
Yeah.
Clouds block the sun. The vampires come on out.
Also, it's like, okay, if they're like, oh, the vampires came out in the day because they wanted to catch me off guard.
Right.
But aren't you sleeping at night?
Right.
So
oh
isn't
my
that,
God.
Like, aren't you literally... Oh, the most vulnerable.
I trained myself to get on the schedule where I sleep during the day.
God.
I mean, if you're sleeping at night, they don't need to worry about coming out in the day because they can catch you while you're freaking sleeping.
That's the best point I've ever heard.
Oh my God. Yeah, that does speak to a big issue I have with this movie. A lot of poor planning.
Yeah
no like, one sleeps or does anything. There's nothing other than just running away from monsters.
And yet when they make a plan, there are sometimes the plans are so precise.
Yes.
They count on the like a knowledge of physics that is impossible. Where it's like, okay, I'll swing here, I will very quickly knock out a trapeze artist and get on the trapeze.
Yes.
And then I will be able, then I'll do this. I'll land here. Then you will shove a guy who happens to be breathing fire at that moment, who will breathe fire on Dracula. Like,
right.
this is, come on, guys. What are we doing?
That is, using this word again, relentless. Like it is people, it is like a cocaine addled
Yeah.
It's not the writing of it. It's that like, it's as though all of these characters are on a bender.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like, yeah, no, and then you're, and then we're going to go here and the fastest horses in the world are Transylvanian horses. So yeah. you guys will go, but yeah, we need a second one.
yeah.
We need two six horses.
To check the werewolf.
You drive toward the Broken Bridge and then, the Broken Bridge and then it'll get on fire and, the witches will think that it's in there. And then, it's like, that's,
I'm already there.
No
I'm already there.
and somehow they've opened a restaurant and installed it. Yeah.
Also, there was something that happened in the movie that I didn't understand how it happened, which is all these little baby vampires were born and then they came out and then all of a sudden they were like trying to eat people. And then all of a sudden they all like just died.
Yeah, they blew up.
Yeah.
The plot point you missed that explains that does not exist. They just died.
Oh, good. Okay.
At one point they're like, oh, the werewolf venom wasn't strong enough to keep the babies alive.
Yeah, so they're using monsters as vectors for electricity to electrocute their vampire gooey young into being alive because they're born dead.
Right.
But it's not enough strong. So they got to go Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Yes.
Frankenstein is the key because what happens is the vampire babies, they're only alive for so long, but with Frankenstein, they'll stay alive.
Undying monster.
Because he's dead and come alive.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm so angry that this is the story.
Yeah.
Because I didn't get it that when I was watching it.
No, there's no reason you should have. I
didn't understand that.
Right.
But now that you're explaining it to me, I liked it better that it didn't make sense. Because, I don't know. No. Yeah.
So many producer notes could just be bypassed because I was like, maybe it's better that Noah, it's not clear.
I guess, this movie, the monsters in this movie are many.
Yeah.
There is Dracula, Frankenstein, three different wolfmen.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
One is just a journeyman actor. Wolfman. Yeah. We don't know who he is.
Right, just to introduce us to the idea of Wolfman.
Yes. Yeah. Day player.
a very successful downtown theater actor. Yes.
So nice.
So great.
He's married to Naomi Watts.
But everyone will be at his funeral. You know, it'll be like, you'll be like, oh my God. But then cameo by Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Truly a real.
But he was like also like kind of like the Notre Dame, the
Hunchback of Notre Dame.
He was kind of him also.
They were at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
He kept nodding to that. He kept like the bells and the, you know what I mean?
What a weird dynamic is a monster. Yeah. We were talking like to be a literate,
so poetic,
a monster from literature.
What a weird dynamic is a monster.
To be a monster from literature, commenting on another monster from literature in that monster's house.
Yeah.
And then you're like,
he was there where the hunchback lives. Yeah. And so I was like, is he the he announced himself as being Mr. Hyde.
Right.
He announced that.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay. But then the whole like Notre Dame thing and the tower, like I was like, okay, huh? Like
it's very weird to put Mr. Hyde in Paris. It's weird to do.
Yeah.
Right. And I thought Mr. Hyde was a London dude.
London monster.
Born and bred.
They say, like, well, Scotland Yard chased you out of London. And this is a huge gorilla man. Scotland Yard is bobby sticks. They're not going to chase anyone anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They don't have guns.
Right.
He was afraid of being arrested and embarrassed.
I imagine.
Was it like a shooting thing? Like they wrote it for Westminster Abbey and couldn't get in there, so they made it Notre Dame or something?
That's a really good point.
I don't know. Or they needed something closer to Rome?
The idea of Van Helsing is he's some dude where all the monsters come around because
he's a character in Dracula.
Right. Yeah. He's a Dutch.
He's like a real
dude. Dutch scientist. And he's supposed to be like kind of an old, like an old weird guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Bram's, in the like classic Dracula movie, he's like an old dude.
Right. And so this is, what's also confusing about this is a prequel to that, but they kill Dracula.
Yeah.
So I guess it's more of a reimagining of this character entirely. Because kind of the fun about Van Helsing is he's a really unassuming guy with glasses, I think.
Yeah.
Who is secretly a vampire hunter. Mm-hmm. Not a gorgeous, long, silken-haired...
Like, bounty hunter. Like,
he's not an action dude. He's like just
badass.
All brain.
Right.
Yeah.
Slim-jacked. Like.
So is Hugh Jackman is, like, notoriously charming in real life? Is that what you've heard?
I mean, that is, like, that's kind of his thing.
Paul met him.
That everyone just seems to love him.
How was your meeting him?
I did a talk show with him.
Very charming.
It was a talk show for Australian television, but it was filmed in LA.
Oh, wow.
And it was me and Hugh Jackman and Tim Gunn.
Oh.
Were the panel.
Oh, my God.
It's online. You can find it on YouTube.
Fashion icons.
It was so much fun. It was just like a conversational show.
Really
so much
good.
Fun. Hugh Jackman was like incredibly charming and nice and, you know, like down to earth. It was great.
Yeah.
Like, but he's like friends with Ivanka and Jared.
Is he? Oh no. Yeah. I was just going to tell another charming anecdote about I went to see him on Broadway.
And he was like, well, I'm not, you know.
We don't talk about politics.
I'm not political or whatever.
Cool, dude.
People from other countries.
That's the only thing I can cling to is that he's from another country.
I know. Yeah. Like we've had British hosts. Like during Trump time be like, I don't want to do anything political because, you know, I think everyone should be able to enjoy the show. And I'm like, I disagree with you.
I think you shouldn't enjoy any show.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong.
Is it bad? Yeah. Oh, that sucks. Yeah. I saw him on Broadway when I was 16 in The Boy from Oz.
Wow.
And he signed my playbill and he was very sweet.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's like super cool and he's been... Hasn't he been like happily married to the same lady for a long time?
Yeah.
But you know, I keep thinking about that. I'm like, what do you have to talk about with Ivanka and Jared?
If you're not talking about politics, where does that conversation go?
And it's like, you're Hugh Jackman. You can make better friends. Like I
absolutely.
You can be friends with anyone.
Yes, we're right here.
Because
no one's going to be
like a celebrity and you're good looking and you know, you're from Australia and that already gives you like an edge because you have an accent. You know, it's like,
it's funny hearing him in this movie. Like, cause I'm used to hearing him either with an Australian accent or like Wolverine accent, which I think is just sort of vague Canadian American. But in this one, he doesn't have an accent.
Is he
he started out with just a flat American accent, and then by the end it was like sort of British, sort, and I was like, wait, is this just his regular voice? Because it wasn't full British.
He was talking to Kate Beckinsale too much during the break.
Oh, wow.
He was like picking up on her.
Oh God.
You know, British, don't you think? Her posh.
Mm-hmm. He definitely does like a kind of sloppy British S towards the, you know, it's like, it's like in performances when all of a sudden everyone sort of does this. And it's like, I don't think people talk like that. I think it's like a Shakespearean, it's like a thing that people do when they're like, I'm not myself. I'm an actor. Like, I think that is what they do.
Like, this is a performance right
and
now.
There was a lot of acting in this movie.
Boy, too much.
Capital A, capital C, capital T-I-N-G.
We have not even touched Richard Roxburgh yet.
Let's talk about him.
First of all,
he looks like John Hamm and Katie Lang fused together in this movie.
So bisexuals, eat your heart out, baby.
Yeah, that's. I was going to say there's not much gay about this movie, but
you know
that
what?
Is.
That's kind of a compliment too.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're right.
Really,
it's not a bad fusion.
No,
he's even got the little like thin the wisps. Strands. The wisps.
I had those for a long time.
Oh, sure, yeah. Absolutely.
In the late 90s and early 2000s, as many of us did.
Yeah,
he's got like a banana clip in the back.
I recognized my own hair clip when he turned around. I was like, I have that hair clip. Like, I have that plastic hair clip.
Representation matters.
Yeah, I did. I liked seeing it on screen.
I never saw myself on screen until
I never saw my hair clip. I saw my hair clip on screen and it meant something.
It was just that the television had turned off and it was my own reflection.
We've covered the monsters, but Richard Roxburgh plays Dracula. And he had a big previous couple years. He was in Moulin Rouge. He was in Leave Extraordinary Gentlemen. I think he's a good actor, and it's hard to play Dracula. What is it? Did we decide that he is doing his due diligence as an actor, but in his head he's like, oh, this is not going to do well?
I felt watching it was that he was – like he had planned a bunch of big swings that he was going to take, but he didn't seem to be completely confident in them, and he didn't seem to be having fun.
Yeah.
It seemed like – okay, I'm going to try some shit or whatever. Like, because when he's doing some outrageous things that almost feel like he was directed to do them.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's like, I don't know. This seems like stuff that an actor would come up with through rehearsal, through, you know, trying to find a characterization and then like kind of balks at the last minute. Like, is this good? Like, no one's telling me. I can't believe anybody that's telling me this is good.
Right. And it is like, I understand putting in those big swings like you're talking about, because so much of his lines, so much of Dracula's lines is exposition.
Right.
And like, miserable recounting of fertility struggles, which is a hard plot point to introduce.
Also, like,
into a monster
that should
movie.
Be like a sexual role. That should be sexy. Like, he should be kind of horny, and like, he's, you know, the whole fertility thing. I mean, it just does. He just feels like he's a miserable character. Like, because he even says he's like, I feel nothing. I live forever. And
it's,
you know,
like Arthur Miller does Dracula.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I got to say, I don't think that's an uninteresting take on that character of like, it's lonely to live forever. And, you know, you can't, I feel empty inside, but it's not fun. That's for sure.
Yeah. And if you're screaming it, it's hard.
Yes.
And also, if he was the only monster who was screaming monologues, that would be okay.
They screamed everything.
There's so much yelling.
Scream everything.
Operatic screaming of character.
It was like
and Shuler Helmsley, who plays Frankenstein, also like very respected stage actor. Mm-hmm. It does feel like these people were all directed to kind of be like video game cutscene characters.
Yes.
Like, it's all just so big and there's no, like we were talking about, there's no like settled in moment of reflection or like settled in human moment. Mm-hmm. Like the quiet moments in this movie are like, help my family go to heaven. Like, it's
miserable. Stone cold bummers wall to wall. There was no like Indiana Jones and Karen Allen flirting. Like, you dumb jerk. Kiss, kiss.
Like the scene with the, where they're on the boat and it's like, it hurts there. It hurts there. Where doesn't it hurt? You know, like that's a fun, cute, sexy scene.
Right.
And it's like, there needed to be something like that in this movie.
And they're like a second into a scene where they're drinking absinthe together.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, don't let that hit your tongue. And then instantly they just fall 800 feet and then meet Frankenstein.
Into another plot hole. It opened up beneath them.
I have a question. What is, does it, do each of us have a favorite Dracula?
My default might be Frank Langella. I saw him when I was a little kid. I saw him do Dracula on Broadway.
Wow.
And then I recently watched the movie version of it and I had never seen it. Wow. And it's a fun movie. Like, it's a good Dracula movie.
That one had the like stage design by the famous artist who did like Mystery Theater on PBS, the opening. And
Edward Gorey?
Edward Gorey. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I heard Frank Langella is amazing.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
And what's his name? Laurence Olivier is Van Helsing. And, you know, it's worth watching. Absolutely. It's a good movie.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite Dracula, Janie?
I don't because I don't think I've seen many.
You haven't seen enough Draculas?
I know. I've seen
how many Draculas make up a lifetime?
Interview with the Vampire. This movie now, that's maybe it.
But Interview with the Vampire, do you remember enjoying that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one's also like 4 hours long. That's a long movie.
Yeah, it's really long.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
It's so long.
But two very hot vampires.
Yes.
Very, yeah.
But absolutely everyone is miscast in that movie.
Oh my gosh.
I've never
except
seen
for
it.
Kirsten Dunst, who's
Kirsten
like
Dunst
amazing.
So
she's amazing.
She kind of steals the movie, to be honest.
For sure.
I believe nominated for an Academy Award.
Yes.
That's... Yeah, I mean, it's hard because it's like you want to think that there are so many iconic Draculas, and like Gary Oldman's fine. I do think it's Bela Lugosi for me as an originalist. But again, I prefer Bela Lugosi in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein because his self-seriousness is so elevated by being in like a silly place. But also I think like when you read the book of Dracula, he's sort of impossibly scary and sexy and charming. And it like, I actually don't know that there is someone who could play him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a Hemsworth maybe.
Oh
like,
my God.
Really? Yeah. Sorry. Maybe. I'm just a development executive actually. I actually got to go. I'm just going to walk to a lot.
Did you have a second?
No, go ahead.
Did you have a second Dracula?
Honestly, I have to say my favorite Dracula is Richard Roxburgh and Van Helsing.
Wow.
I find him hot. I was the right age when I saw this.
Yeah.
Sure. Like a baby bisexual girl.
He's a guy with long hair and a trench coat.
He has the wisps.
He's got the wisps.
The hair clip.
The hair clip, the leather with the stick through it.
Yes.
Like, just like a guy in his early 40s with a like fake accent, I was like, I'm in.
Yeah.
This is great. And like, it's funny what you're talking about with the Abbott and Costello, where like the self-seriousness works because there's comedy around it. I do wonder, because I compare Richard Roxburgh's performance to Arnold Vosloo in The Mummy, which is a similar embarrassing level of embarrassing shit you have to do. Like a lot of like your dick's out, you're screaming in a river. It's so embarrassing. Yeah. But I feel Arnold Vosloo's performance worked, yes, and Richard Roxburgh's didn't quite get there, which partially I think Richard Roxburgh had like 1,000 lines that were, yeah, all
he had too many
bad.
Yeah. It was the it was more the movie than him.
And yeah.
It didn't elevate
yeah,
his.
Yeah, maybe it is the direction, because there's no, even in the, all the stuff that he had delivered, there's no peaks and valleys in that either. It's all like the same, like on one level, like shouted out, you know?
Yes.
And they lost, I think, a lot of the charm of Dracula,
right,
in that he's always like, oh yeah, he's a monster. Like for sure. Like, right, there's nothing, yeah, seductive about him. He's always like, here's me. Here's my plan. I got a bunch of egg sacs that I want to be born.
You're right. It's not, yeah, seductive. Like he, yeah, he like what Janie said, like she roofies her, yes, and, yeah, takes her to a dance, yeah, and it like puts his hand between her cleavage, and like, it was so clinical. Like it wasn't, yes, sexy at all.
Totally. Yeah. Yes.
Which sucked, because they, I don't know, I think they had all the makings, and it was just because he was like an exposition delivery device.
And, mm-hmm, also like, at least an interview with the vampire, my, mm-hmm, point of reference, it's like when she's like kissed, like when you're next to Dracula, like the whole thing is that you are like falling in love with him,
yeah, you're and
into
fall,
you're right, into, right, like kissing him, and then he bites you and you're screwed,
right?
But that, yeah, like
it's classic,
the way
textbook Dracula,
they kind of like made it seem like she was under like this other, like it wasn't because he was seductive.
Right.
It felt like he, yeah, had like he,
like she had literally been drugged and
like
she had
literally
fight
been
back,
drugged, yeah, or something. Like it wasn't that he was seducing her, like her, his pheromones were so strong that she couldn't like, you know, resist him. It's like she was like, cause he even says, how does it feel to be a puppet on my strings or whatever? Yeah. And it was like, you should almost feel like, oh no, she likes him.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Oh no.
That's danger. Exactly.
Yes, because that's one thing that Interview with the Vampire does.
Yes. I'll watch it.
Does well, yeah, you know, and it just was weird because it seemed like she just like was not like something else took over her, not her own desire.
Right. Yeah. And that's, yeah, yeah, it's similar to why Van Helsing as a character is not interesting, because he is being compelled by forces outside of him. He doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
He doesn't,
yeah,
want to kill monsters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to kill this monster. She doesn't want to be like, if he wanted to kill monsters, it would be amazing. If she maybe liked Dracula, that's compelling.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know why? Because we as viewers like liking things.
Yeah.
We like liking things.
And we like, we like characters who are conflicted.
Yes. Yes.
And,
exactly.
And the sort of like mystery, like why Dracula as a stage play in like the 20s was such a huge success is it was like this mysterious concept of like sex from the neck up, that it was like, oh, like sex exists as this mysterious thing, mm-hmm, and that Dracula kind of symbolizes it. And instead, when you replace the mysteriousness of sex with bat sacks, like it, all of a sudden we're like, oh, that's what vampire sex
with,
is?
Like, with slime.
Yes. Yeah,
you're, yeah, picturing
bat sacks with like slime and like,
yes,
Josie Maran cover girl, like squatting and laying big green splorts.
Yes.
Like that sucks.
No one wanted to see
that. And she did it thousands of times.
Yes.
There are thousands of these like soccer bag sized egg sacks, yeah, around this castle.
Oh, I bet like, they were built around soccer ball bags.
It looked a lot like the Godzilla eggs in 1998.
Wow.
Godzilla.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Paul briefly touched on the horrible squelching sound, ugh, that, yeah, is used so often in this movie when people are regenerating, when bats are coming out of sacks. I will say bat sacks. I will say, I do appreciate the opening scene. I think the opening scene
on the Notre Dame.
The black and white.
The prologue with Victor Frankenstein.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I think there's something like, to me, that scene kind of gets the silliness of this mm-hmm. while also embracing what makes those old monster movies something we like. It's playing on all the tropes. And then it just really loses its way after that. Absolutely. I'm bummed to say.
Yeah. It's also like, as Jason, boyfriend of the pod, brought up, like he said that this movie starting in black and white, he thinks made it really hard for people of our generation to get their hooks into it
yeah.
because black and white is old movie. Who cares?
Yeah, I know.
And like, just because you as the director or writer of this movie love old monster movies, that doesn't mean I do.
Yeah.
And that it's like we all, as soon as the title card goes up where it's like written and directed by Stephen Sommers in memory of my dad, it's like that's a very sad. Sweet thing that I'm sure is true mm-hmm. that like he had this relationship with his dad where they loved old monster movies. And I think like,
but now we're assuming that, right?
That is entirely, I am the definition of a rube.
Right.
Like I really, my driver's license picture, I look like the true dictionary picture of a rube. And I think I'm the exact person to fall for that sort of thing. But if that is true, and I hope it is, I like to believe Steven is, then I feel like there is the kernel of what makes that relationship special. And like what you loved about monster movies. And if you shared that with your dad, is that like what you didn't love was like convoluted plot lines in monster mm-hmm. movies.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. The plot of Indiana Jones is really straightforward.
Yes.
Yeah.
We need to get that thing because the other people want it.
Yeah.
And this exact thing of like, if Anna is a person who is like, I need to get this done, but also I kind of have the hots for Dracula.
Right.
And if Van Helsing is someone who's like, I really love killing monsters, but I'm really good at it, but I'm thinking maybe it's not good, even though I love it so much. Like already those are like kind of more relatable conflicts
yeah.
than like being an ageless warrior who has no memory of his past.
Right.
Which, by the way, is not at all answered in this movie.
No, he says perhaps another time, which is basically saying like in the sequel, yeah. we will cover this.
It's
yeah.
such a
yeah.
huge presumptuous thing.
Yes,
to do.
Oh, I know. We've talked about this before. I get really uncomfortable when a movie is like, sequel, please.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that.
And yeah, and Stephen Sommers does do that a lot.
Yeah.
He does it a lot. But also he is this character. Talk about like not limiting yourself. They make him the Archangel Gabriel. Like, who ordered that?
Right.
Again.
That's not a universal right. monster.
Yeah. Yeah, horny yeah. Catholic teens.
That's yeah. true. That's fair.
What did the movie like get panned?
It got yes. really savaged.
It got
did
yeah,
it really?
So that's it really it like it well, let's see. The budget, how much did she cost? She costed 160 to 170 million. And it made 300 million. So it, you know, made probably $80 million more than with the marketing budget.
Right.
But we're past the time where just like making your money back and then some right. is enough. Like it's yeah, gotta be like right. a huge
it was that,
fucking thing.
It was that. Yeah. And also that the reviews were almost uniformly horrific.
Yeah. Wow.
Let's see. Someone called it the worst would-be summer blockbuster since Battlefield Earth.
Oh.
A few unintentionally funny moments.
You just took that so personally.
Really,
oh, I don't think that's fair.
I don't think
oh.
that's fair.
Let's see. Rotten Tomatoes. The site's consensus calls the film a hollow creature feature that suffers from CGI overload.
Oh, that's a good yeah. description.
It's got mm-hmm. 27% on Rotten Tomatoes, 24%.
So they just didn't order the sequel?
They didn't. Yeah. No, a few days after it debuted, the reviews were so bad that they canceled it. Yeah. Mark LaSalle of the San Francisco Chronicle said it was throws together plot strains from various horror movies, tries to muscle things along with flash and dazzle, but his film just lies there, weighted down by a complete lack of wit, artfulness, and internal logic.
Oof.
What Sommers tries to do here is use action only as the only means of involving an audience. So story is sacrificed. Character development is non-existent and there are no attempts to incite emotion. Instead, Sommers tries to hold an audience for 2 hours with nothing up his sleeve, but colored ribbons, bright sparklers, and a kazoo. What he proves is that this is no way to make movies.
Oh my wow. God.
Would you like to know the one person who liked this movie?
Yes.
Yes.
Roger Ebert.
Oh!
He gave this movie 3 out of 4 stars.
Stop it. That's crazy.
He says, at the outset, we may fear Summers is simply going for FX overkill. But by the end, he has somehow succeeded in assembling all his monsters and plot threads into a high voltage climax. Van Helsing is silly, spectacular, and fun. Girl.
Wow.
I'll give you that it's silly.
And I, the thing is, I remember knowing it was bad, but also in spite of myself, I love to see a bunch of monsters up on screen fighting. I think, and this has been the bane of my existence from the very beginning. I felt this way during Benicio del Toro's Wolfman, which was another movie that I took a whole mess of friends to.
Oh, no.
And boy, I should have known that one.
I have not seen that one.
That movie got delayed like 9 times. Wow. It came out like 3 years after it was supposed to. Went through 2 different directors, everything. And even the attempt to reboot like the Dark Universe, which was Universal's attempt to like have their own Marvel Cinematic Universe populated by monsters. Like, they just don't know what is fun about. Yeah. Like, they can't. Yeah. They actually cannot figure out why The Mummy was successful, mm-hmm. even though it is so clear to all of us that like simple storyline, fun actors, you know, borrow from what works in other genre type movies.
Yeah. You know who the people are, you know what they want, you know why they want it, and you think they're right to want it.
Yeah.
Right.
I think the reason that The Mummy works, and this is a Stephen Sommers strength, is the video gaminess of it.
Yes.
Of like, it is very simple in that way. Of like, you have to do this to get to the final thing, right. You know, and then you win. And there's a lot of video gaminess in Van Helsing, but it's so convoluted. I feel like it almost hurts that we know what Dracula's motives are so early on.
Right.
Like, if it had not been like, oh, fucking Dracula's been terrorizing our village for a million years and it sucks and we can't do anything about it. We persist in living here. there's nothing we can do. If it had been like he arrives there and he's being very suave and charming and he's like trying to buy the affections of everyone. And then we find out later, this is what he wants Frankenstein for. This
that
is what, like,
been
you know
more.
What I mean? If it had unfolded instead of like just everybody yelling their thing all the time from the beginning.
Yeah.
Gentrifying.
And then you're just waiting for it to be over.
Yeah. Dracula as like corporate America.
Yeah.
Like coming and being like, love your town. Hey, drinks on me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's all like, I want to replace you all with vampire babies.
Yeah.
I also think that everyone yelling their thing all the time should be the tagline for this movie.
It was like,
what if he had not, you know, funded the Frankenstein monster, but he found out about the Frankenstein monster.
Yes.
He's like, I got to get that monster. You know,
huge.
And then we find out why, like, I don't know. It just could have been
seduced him a little bit instead of paying him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is
that's
so
not
funny.
Compelling.
And Igor, like Igor's motivation. We haven't even talked about Igor, but Igor's only motivations in all this is that like Dracula pays him. I just don't like thinking about Dracula, like taking his wallet out. Like it's something about it. It all is just too much for me.
Yeah. Right. And there was no treasure in this movie.
There was
big
no
problem.
Treasure. In
no
this
treasure.
Movie. Not even a glimpse.
So Van Helsing, he's like the angel Gabriel.
That's what they're saying.
And he works for like the Vatican.
Right.
And they're mad at him.
But he doesn't know he's the angel Gabriel.
Right.
Right? I didn't when Dracula was calling him Gabriel, I did not make that connection.
So
at
the
all.
Archbishop was like, you'll figure out what your ring means.
Oh,
so he knew.
I'm gonna have a dumb ring.
He knew, they all know that he's Gabriel.
The Vatican erased his memory as punishment for past crimes.
How do you know this? Was
the
this in
Cardinal,
the movie?
Alan Armstrong says it in the Vatican.
But
he
it is under a sheath of full bullshit.
Right.
Like it just.
It's like over a wide shot of a cavern full of 80 extras in different costumes.
Right.
And he is shouting. He is just like, and we get rid of your memory. Like this because it's because you did bad stuff in the bed. And it's just like, what? I can't absorb all this.
So wait a minute.
She's just now processing the opening.
He's the angel Gabriel who works for the Vatican, who erased his memory. Mm-hmm. And he's adopted this persona of
Van Helsing.
Van Helsing. And they're like, you need to go kill monsters. But then he kills them. And then they're like, they're really people. And you're a murderer. And then they're like, you're so like bad at it. And you like ruined. And then, but here's your next mission. Should you choose to accept it kind of thing? And he's like, I guess this is what I do. So yeah, I'll do it. I don't understand in any way, shape, or form how any of this came to be anything.
Janie, what is so wild about this is you've just described exactly how it felt to be a personal assistant in New York City for several years. Which is like, you're the only person who can do this and you're so bad at it and I hate you. And you had no life before this. And if you do this bad, you're going to have even less of a life. And I'm like, why do I have a box of cookies that cost $400 and like a dog that I've never met before? And I need to go get this dog spayed. Like, this is.
Wait, this is the net. This should be the movie because.
I actually would like to see this movie.
Oh my God.
This should be the movie.
Andrew.
Because I would watch this movie.
That it is.
This movie is so interesting.
This is Van Helsing. The remake of Van Helsing is just Andrew.
It's just me
slice of life
working for a working
like,
for a gallery
curator.
In
New York
curator.
City is Transylvania, and like you're going through all of the.
That is how it felt. It was a lot of me going to the most beautiful apartments I've ever seen. Someone maybe insulting me to my face.
Sure,
I don't know whether it was a compliment or the worst thing anyone's ever
said
to me.
Of course. Around mental illness, like exposed to people's personality disorders,
I had to call like a very fancy restaurant and ask if they could add to their menu for a night.
What?
Just carrots.
What?
Braised. Stop in it. Olive oil, not browned. And that's it. No seasoning or anything.
I am so angry right now.
The response on the phone was, we're a very famous restaurant.
What do you say to that? And you're like, I know.
Oh, and then I had to go back to my boss and be like, they said they're a very famous restaurant. And then she said, well, that's the only thing my mother eats.
What?
And then I was like,
okay. She can't raise her own damn mom some carrots?
That's what I'm like.
I'm sorry. The movie is now about the mom who can only eat olive oil-braised carrots.
I mean, that's the easiest thing in the world to make at home.
That's what was so confusing about it to me.
Also, her mom only eats that.
That was what was weird. This was a very strange situation where they wanted to go out to eat. The mom had a very strict doctor-mandated diet.
Braised carrots and olive oil.
Right. Braised carrots and olive oil. But three times a day.
I want you to... Here, I'm going to write this down for you.
Or you have to shoot her.
Her knees will lock up and then she's done.
She'll turn on you like a bat out of hell.
And then she's literally a bat out of hell. And that's how we get back.
This is already...
I need to know more about them. She has a mandated diet, and it was only carrots.
But they wanted to go to restaurants because they liked the ambiance of restaurants.
Which is a real fuck you to the mom, the sick mom, in my opinion.
Bring your own carrots.
Right.
Also, by the way,
put them in a baggie.
Also, by the way, it's like...
Could you plate these for me?
Any diner in New York would make that for you.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, like any New York diner has like 20 pages of food, like 20 pages of menu. Just go there.
It's in olive oil. It's on there.
And then how it ended, honestly, was she said, I guess she can also eat salmon. So that kind of opened up a new chapter of what was possible.
Wait a minute.
No.
Now I trust the doctor again because...
Yeah, exactly. I was off board, but now I'm back. Right.
Because that does sound legit.
Yeah.
That sounds legit.
Speaking of bats out of hell, can we focus on something that Van Helsing did right, which is that if Dracula transforms into a bat, of course it would be a big bat.
Yeah.
That makes more sense.
Like a human-sized bat.
That makes more sense.
A big boy bat.
Yes. He wouldn't be a tiny little bat.
He's a tall bat.
He's a man.
Less space.
Yeah, exactly.
When you said that was for me, I was like, why is he ever becoming a little bat?
dumb little bat.
Bats are so small.
Yes.
He's rich.
Like his eyes.
He's rich.
He could make him a big boy bat.
That is...
They also all have to spin before they turn into a bat, which feels this movie less necessary.
Is, they're sky dancers, all of them. Like, you know the thing, you pull the wand and zzz, and they fly away? Like, that is whatever. I'm shocked they didn't merchandise that. Yeah. I would have been the only person.
It was a very toyetic movie. Yeah. I couldn't figure it out.
That is the biggest thing, where it's like the mummy is, like, you can see people pretending to be Rick O'Connell, or like you can see kids wanting to imitate and play that way.
Yeah.
No one wants to be an agent of the Vatican.
Yeah.
No. You
know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No.
No one's like, I'm on special order from the Vatican.
But it's a secret. Don't tell the Pope.
Don't tell. Shh. Just between us cardinals.
Oh, my God. This is a darker movie than I thought.
Taking heart.
Because given the church's history.
Well,
okay.
I mean, I feel we could honestly talk about Van Helsing for days and days.
Because that's how long it lasts.
That is truly... Yes. But this has been a true joy discussing with the two of you. Thank you.
Wait, we have to talk about...
Oh my God, I almost forgot.
What's gay?
What's gay about this
so
movie?
So with Stephen Sommers, I sent you the list, Andrew. If you want to go back and forth, it's on your phone. There's not a lot gay about this movie. It's all pretty straight. You've got some cover girls screaming as vampires. That's one of the straightest things that exist. But we do have a short list of... things that are gay from the movie. Dracula is gay.
100%.
Gay cape removal.
Gay.
A lot of, anytime you take off a cape, gay.
Yeah. The line, you said you believed in my work. Gay.
Storing absinthe in a windmill.
Being the only person in a large group wearing a mask. That's gay. That was Frankenstein in a windmill.
Fainting, canonically gay.
The line, you're a big one, you'll be hard to digest.
Good God. That is Mr. Hyde talking. I will also say Mr. Hyde works the front door at the Eagle. I've seen him several times. Putting a guy's hat on while play fighting.
is also straight.
Which is all, you know what? And that's where gay and straight meet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a flirting way of stealing a hat. Yelling Paris on a rooftop with your ass out.
Also Mr. Hyde's really running away with how gay the movie is. Running a scam with your brother, straight.
That's straight. Yeah, that's Anna and her brother Velkin, who are canonically fucking trying to trap a wolf man. The line, I am hollow and I will live forever.
Being codependent with your sister. Also,
that's gay. Talking about wanting to go to the sea during an emergency.
Yes. Yes. In the middle of a high stress situation, saying, I'll bet it's beautiful.
Well, that should be Venom, that last word.
Okay. Holding someone's chin with two fingers while whisper screaming about werewolf venom. Werewolf venom is a brand of poppers. There's no doubt about it.
Yep. Extremely fraught process of having a baby.
Yes.
That's gay.
That is, honestly, that does feel like a gay storyline.
It's the only thing you talk about.
It's so hard for us. Yeah.
The surrogate's drinking coffee.
Dancing to a man's heartbeat. Dracula.
Dracula. Yeah, I forgot about
cool
that.
Cool off, Dracula.
He was into that.
Cool off.
The line, how long has it been? 300-400 years?
Truly, I said that at Akbar 2 weeks ago. The line, we have such history, you and I, Gabriel. He's gay.
And inviting someone to a Halloween masquerade ball and then laughing and twirling away into the sky.
Gay.
Wow,
Anna, I'm appreciating how much more gay this movie is.
Oh, also, I guess paddleboarding in your street clothes is gay.
and straight.
That's it's also cool. Very yeah. straight. Those I didn't bring a suit. I'm just going to go, Christy, no.
Christy. Or leaving a funeral early. Like, I feel like that's also yes. the yes. Bye. I'm going to the beach.
Oh, my God. And hot men in danger. There's a lot.
Yeah. Velcan in general, there was a lot of gay gays. Female gaze on how sweaty he was and how little clothes he was wearing. Yeah, wow. Great work.
God, there's a lot. Dying on a couch is gay.
Dying on a couch.
Dying on a velvet couch.
And then your boyfriend lighting you on fire.
So listen, if you couldn't get enough of this episode, Paul and Janie on their podcast, Stay at Homekins, which has been a bomb for me throughout the entire pandemic. It's the most delightful podcast to listen to anytime, perfect. But especially after dinner. I think it's a great after dinner podcast, as has been discussed. They did a viewing of The Mummy recently, which is a true delight.
You can watch
The Mummy with them. You started at the right time. A real, real delight. But listen to any episode. You guys are the true best.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Of course.
It's been a little delight.
We're so thrilled to be here. Thank you for having us.
Oh my gosh.
What a fun evening this was.
Yeah, it really was.
We're so good. Truly, the pièce de résistance is Chris microwaved us all some soft pretzels.
I'm so excited.
Right as the podcast began. And there is 1.5 left, which...
some dessert pretzels.
How did that happen? I looked away and now, like, wow.
He's never wrong. But is there anything that we can promote or anything cut you got coming up?
I don't know. When will this be released?
This coming Friday.
Jesus H.
You have a new cartoon Jellystone coming out on.
That's right.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I don't get to promote things that I actually make money from and that people can see. Yes, I do a bunch of voices on the new Jellystone on HBO Max.
Coming out soon.
Including Megilla Gorilla and The Funky Phantom.
I mean, we'll do an episode on The Funky Phantom.
you guys should. That was that's way before your time though. When I was a kid, that was a new cartoon and it was about, I guess it was during the bicentennial and there was a founding father's ghost.
Oh my gosh.
Who like helped these humans solve some crimes. And I think he also had a ghost. It was pretty cute.
You have three other podcasts as well.
Yes, that's true. I also have
The Neighbor
Freedom with Scott Aukerman and Lauren Lapkus. I have The Neighborhood Listen with Nicole Parker, where we take posts from next door and we use them as fodder for character improvisation. Andrew just recorded an episode, which will be out in a little bit.
It's such a great podcast.
It's so much fun. Also, you were fantastic.
That's very kind.
Oh my God.
But truly, you both have been such a joy. It really is a dream having you here. This was so much fun.
It was our pleasure. This is so much fun.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks to both of you. For coming.
And thank you to boyfriend of the pod, Jason, husband of pod, Chris, and to Lady Bird.
Lady Bird, who's dog of the pod. Quite a shine to the Tompkinses.
We're friends now.
She's asleep on the mother blanket next to Paul. The blanket has the texture of mother, which she likes.
Aww. Right, which is a real treat. If you liked what you heard today, you can follow us on Instagram or Twitter at @scarystory_pod.
You can send us your scary stories or other scary anecdotes to scarystorypod@gmail.com.
And next Friday, we will be watching The Mummy 3.
Tomb of
the Dragon Emperor, which I have not seen yet.
Wow.
So in case folks want to give it a watch beforehand, we'll both be newborn babies coming into it.
You know what? I'm going to watch that because I've never seen it.
I mean, but thank you again. This is a true joy. And one more thing you can do for us.
Get out.
Forever Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Scary Stories to Tell on the Pod is executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. Produced by Tracy Soren. Original theme music by Chris Ryan. Cover art by Bats Langley. To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Check out video clips of our podcasts on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook @ForeverDogTeam to keep up with all the latest Forever Dog news.